And hello, and we are back with the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. I'm your host, Steve McBain. We're here again at a District 10 Bistro here in Yui Square in Singapore, and I'm joined by pod regulars, Mr. Tom Warren. Tom, how are you?
Excellent, Steve. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ryan Marsden, how are you?
Good afternoon.
And Mr. Drew O'Donnell.
Hello.
Now, Ryan, before we get started, I just wanted to check out, I mean, it's a sports podcast. I just wanted to check how your midlife crisis is going in your new BMXing career.
It's going very well. I'm bunny hopping like there's no tomorrow.
You're bunny hopping in your 40s, are you?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, and just one step down from that, Drew, Rangers and the Petrofac Cup.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We've won everything now. That's it. I can retire.
And you've been showing that Tavernier goal to absolutely everybody.
Anyone who's willing to look, go on rangerstv.com or YouTube and look it up. It's fantastic.
Oh, Tom, have you got anything to add to proceedings at this stage?
Fulham are safe in the Championship. I think, you know, might push in the top half of the table. 5 games to go.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, we'll crack on with part one, and we'll move swiftly to Barcelona. Tom, I mean, that's them out of the Champions League. City are through. I mean, we've also got Real and Bayern. I mean, which matchup do you think would give City the best chance of getting through?
I think Real Madrid. I mean, I've seen it written this morning. I think City want Real Madrid, and Real Madrid probably want to play City. I think Real Madrid are the most probably unorganised team out of the teams that remain in the semi-finals.
I guess they rely a lot on individuals, right?
Yeah. I'd be quite interested. It would be quite interesting to see, obviously, Bayern versus City. What would Guardiola do? So that would be quite interesting, but I think they want Real Madrid. To me, what quite impressed me was Otamendi and Mangala. They played really well against Paris Saint-Germain, and I think because they're playing European football, which is where they've plied their trade, you know, they actually can play quite well and manage to keep PSG quite quiet.
Yeah, I mean, Drew, what's happened with Barcelona here? I mean, is this them just, I mean, they've played a hell of a lot of games this season. I mean, they've obviously had the World Club Championship, the European Super Cup and things. And Enrique hasn't really rotated. Last year he rotated a bit more. Have they just run out of steam, or?
I think so. I think with Messi not sort of firing on all cylinders and getting the goals in about his last six games or something, he's went without scoring. But if you look at it, losing against Real Madrid 2-1 and losing against Atletico, it's not exactly bad games to lose, because they're the closest rivals in the league. And you expect it to be very close, and it was just, I mean,
well,
that
4 points ahead, 4 points ahead of Atletico now in the league,
yeah.
And three ahead of Atletico, yeah. Four ahead of Real, I think.
Yeah. So I mean, for me, I think it was just a bad stumble against two of their closest rivals, unfortunately for them.
Well, they've not won in 5 as well in the league as well, and they had the international break. And all their, you know, Messi, Suarez,
all right.
Neymar.
So,
all
right, so Tom, who's? I mean, we don't. Obviously, the draw will be later today. But who's your money on to win outright?
City.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Don't be daft.
Oh. No, I think they.
Ryan, that means that you disagree.
Yeah.
So who for you?
But City.
Who for you?
Well, not three others to choose from. I think it's going to be very close. But of all of the four, City are not in my top three. I'll go with Real just from experience.
I'm starting to have a sneaky that they might just...
Yeah, just experience.
I'd like Atletico.
That's who I'd like to win.
But
yeah.
I do think, I've got this gut feeling, I think the way it'll work is City will finish 4th, West Ham or Man U, City will finish 5th, West Ham or Man U will finish 4th, and Liverpool are going to win the UEFA, and England will have 6 teams in the Champions.
Yeah, but you were also saying that Manchester City were going to win everything this year.
I was drinking heavily at the time.
All right. Now, I mean, Ryan, I mean, if you look at Atletico, I mean, they've consistently sold, you know, many of the best players every summer. I mean, their captain from last season was playing for Barcelona, came off the bench on Wednesday night. I mean, is Diego Simeone pound for pound the best manager in Europe?
I mean, it's a difficult call because, you know, even in the lower leagues, you know, you can look at Championship, Division 1, 2.
Well, top flight manager.
He's definitely up there, if not the best. What he does, they're always playing second fiddle in the domestic league, of course, to Real and Barca. But sheer organisation, you know, playing to your resources, you know, he's not got unlimited resources. He doesn't have the town council giving him, you know, $300 million training fields and that sort of thing. So, absolutely. And you know, it's a character as well. So characters are what
attract
the best out of players.
I guess the thing with this, though, Tom, is that, you know, it's like a... it's like a slightly better version of Davy Moyes, in that you've got a certain amount of resources, you've got a fairly pragmatic way of playing football. But if Simeone went to, say, Barcelona or Bayern Munich or wherever, and he had the access to the most money and the very best players, would he replicate it, or is this something he kind of, he needs to have this sort of street fight mentality? Or?
I think if he went to one of the top clubs, I do think he would struggle. I think on the way he builds, in some ways, there's a Mourinho where he builds that siege mentality, gets the players to fight together as a team and fight for the overcoming result. Also, as well, for Atletico as well, you've got the stadium, obviously, the Calderon, you know, is probably one of the most noisy stadiums in Europe to watch.
It's also one of the most rubbish.
And also, as well, they come out to AC/DC, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's a very intimidating place to play.
He himself is a character, and it's really that strength of that character will translate. You know, David Moyes, you know, great respect to him, doesn't have the character of him or a Klopp,
yeah,
or Mourinho. But does that enable you to transcend the challenges of absolute top flight management?
I mean, if you look at Simeone, what he's done at Atletico Madrid, you know, they don't lose that many games. They've got their two biggest rivals, Barcelona and Real, and they consistently are either splitting them or on top of them. You know, it's always been those three since he came. But
consistent as well.
But I think when you you know, you touch on the point where they've sold a lot of their best players, you know, over the past few years, and a lot has to be given credit, or the shared credit, with that Andrea Berta, who's the sporting director at Atletico. He's been the guy that's sort of been the wheeler and dealer in the transfer markets for them. And there's rumours that if Mourinho does go to Man U, he's going to get brought to Man U. And that's over to you, Ryan. I'm sure that'll put a big smile on your face.
Just wondering, their transfer policy, it's not just a matter of selling their top, but maybe it's a matter of who they're deciding to keep.
But if you look at their wage bill last year was €75 million, which is a third of the two big clubs in Spain, and it would only actually reach 15th in the Premier League.
No, it shows you that it can be done. Ryan, you mentioned Jurgen Klopp in the same context. I mean, fantastic comeback for Liverpool last night. You'll be delighted, I'm sure.
Not really.
Sounds like it's a bit of a backs to the wall. But and fantastic result, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's making, and quite rightly, making comparisons to the great comebacks, not only of Liverpool, but European results. I think quite correct. By all accounts, it was all Klopp-related. Half-time team talk was meant to be absolutely inspirational, and they came out running. It was very impressive, of course.
Okay, well, I mean, there's left in there are Sevilla, who were a bit lucky, scraped through against Bilbao despite getting beat at home. Shakhtar Donetsk and Villarreal. Tom, who do you fancy from these four?
Sevilla have got the pedigree. If they win this, it'll be a hat-trick. So for the narrative, I'd quite like Sevilla to win. However, I think with Klopp's team talk, I think, Liverpool could do it. Why not a double for English teams in Europe?
I'd actually like to see Liverpool win, just to see...
I mean, that's the problem with Liverpool.
Liverpool win, just for the simple fact that the English clubs have just been pathetic in taking this competition so lightly. In fact, I was listening to something where they said that the English club should have the option, if they qualify in the Europa League spots, whether to take the spot or not. I mean, it's just such little England. You know. Anyway, so you reckon?
I think Liverpool got a chance. In my heart, Liverpool.
Due to their inconsistency, I'll go with Sevilla.
I'm going to go Shakhtar Donetsk.
You know what? It's not a bad shout, because you know the problem with a lot of the Russian, the Ukrainian clubs and things is that they come out of that winter break and they normally get knocked out in that first knockout round because they're not up to speed. Once they're back up to speed, they're a decent team and the home legs are always hard.
Yeah.
Now, staying with knockout competitions, Ryan, United are through to the semi-final against the might of Everton. Would winning the FA Cup see the Mad King keep his job?
It absolutely shouldn't.
But Ed Woodward seems to want him to stay, does it?
I just don't see how he can... they're doing the honourable thing, keeping him to the end of the season, but there is no way he can justify staying there another season.
Have you put your hat into the mix, Ryan?
I'm just updating my CV currently, and this podcast is top of my footballing achievements.
His tactics are shocking.
I mean, Drew, you're another United fan. Would you like to see LVG given another season?
No,
or?
No, I mean, I just don't understand why you would even consider giving him another season. No. His tactics, as we've talked about off air, is just a shambles, where you've got total football being a total mess and you actually think there is directors of football when you've got a team that has hardly a shot on target
again.
Or even hardly a shot.
That's the problem.
during a game, you've got to think, this is not a type of football I want to pay money to.
But
this
is, he shouldn't say, even if there's no managers available, but there is a very good manager available.
At the same time, I mean, this is exactly the type of football that Holland played at the last World Cup. I mean, the semi-final that they went out in on penalties, they didn't have a shot on target in the whole game.
It's just embarrassing.
Well, speaking of managers who are not doing very well, Drew, the Everton fans seem to have finally turned on Martinez. There's been Martinez out banners. There's been he's one of us banners in support of Leighton Baines. I mean, the results just aren't there. I mean, they've got two players up for the Young Player of the Year award, Barkley, Lukaku. He keeps saying how well all these players are developing, but at the same time, John Stones looks like he's in reverse.
Yes. I mean, I personally don't know. You know, I've taken it on board. I mean, normally I just sort of like to whinge out about Martinez, but...
he's rubbish, let me tell you.
When you think about it, I mean, he had a reasonable record at Swansea. I think he had a 50% win record, you know, and he only lost about 20% of the time. I don't know, when he went to Wigan, he was shocking when you actually read the stats on it. He was absolutely shocking.
Well, they just got out of jail every season.
He only had a 30% win record, and, I mean, apart from winning the cup, which was lucky, I don't even think he would have been in a job after that. But if you look at what he's done at Everton, it's been average, but then... At the end of the day, Everton are 12th, 13th in the league. They're
not with those players.
I think Tom,
a lot of people are saying that, for instance, the first season when they did quite well, that's because they still had a lot of Moyes' defensive ethos in there. So they were still well organised. But the thing is now, they've had this new investment come in. I mean, Everton are now talking like they can afford to keep the players, they can go into the transfer market. If you were an Everton fan, would you want him trusted with that? What do they call it? A war chest?
War chest. No, you wouldn't. He's shown his frailties through the team. They've had some shocking results. I mean, it says normally if you go around the table and, you know, when you sat around and say, where do you think Everton in the league? Most people are going to say probably in the top 10. You know, if you look at the table where they are, the results they've been producing, it's not acceptable from a manager that's meant
just
to be...
Lack of dimension, lack of tactical alternatives. It just doesn't do anything.
Poor game management.
Excellent. So we're all agreed he's rubbish. Now, Tom, you're our championship expert, and that's where Villa are heading. Seems like sort of Nigel Pearson's maybe the new favourite. Who do you think they should be appointing?
Yeah, Nigel Pearson's the front runner. He's got pedigree from doing it. He's got past. They're even talking about who he's going to bring in as an assistant.
Bang some heads and Chris Powell.
No, not definitely not his son. He won't be on the pre-season tour. I think that's the right appointment for Villa. Things are going to change rapidly. I think this weekend they'll probably be relegated on paper finally, and I think that's when they'll start to make some big changes.
All right. So as they go down, who's going to be heading up? I mean, there's three teams seem to have broken away at the top now. I mean, Brighton, Borough, and who's the other one?
Burnley. Yeah, it's two from those three. However, though, Brighton are playing Fulham tonight, so that's probably another win for Fulham.
Borough, Brighton on the last day.
Yes. So yeah, the next six teams. However, what I find quite interesting, Hull are at the currently 8 points away from it. However, Hull have the easiest run in.
But also Steve Bruce as managers.
Steve Bruce as a championship manager is very good.
He's about as much of a championship manager as I am in my PC.
I think it will be, as it stands now, the two there, Burnley and Borough, will come up automatically. All right. And then the fight out for the playoffs.
We'll see how it goes. Now, Ryan, they've announced the PFA Player of the Year shortlist. Who do you think should win it? I had a very good theory yesterday on the radio yesterday that no Leicester player is going to win it because they're going to split the vote.
Yeah, that's probably.
And then
right.
Harry Kane's going to waltz in and take it.
No, I think young player's probably Dele Alli.
But do you not think Dele Alli should be included in the main vote?
He's not, he didn't get enough, did he?
I think
isn't this decided like in November or something?
Right?
February.
They have moved it a little
when Mahrez was playing very well. Vardy gone off the boil a bit then.
Yeah.
Who are you going to go for? Come on, Ryan.
Well, who do you think? Who would you choose? I mean, not who do you think will win it. Who is your player of the season?
De Gea.
Well, he was going to be on my shortlist, mate. But yeah. That really, a goalkeeper really gets right. It.
No, but I'm saying, who's your player?
Drew's struggling.
I'd like to go for Fellaini. I think he's fantastic. I think he should.
He
should have won more than he ever did. Certainly. Apart from that, I'd go with Kane.
Harry Kane. All right, Tom.
Conte, from Leicester. I think he's going to struggle to win it, but he's got the most tackles in the league, the most interceptions in the league.
What's his fashion sense like? Is it good?
He's a very. I read a statement. When he came to Leicester, he had nothing. And they found him walking to training every day.
Yes.
So they were like, you can't do that. So they gave him a car.
I want him to win.
And it's now his most prized possession.
I want him to win.
And just his work, from watching him more closely for the past month, the way he conducts himself on the pitch, amazing.
I think he should get it, but I think Mahrez will get it. Ryan?
Yeah, well, that would be my choice.
Okay.
For all the right reasons. It's only a shame in the last 2 months he's got the profile or plaudits he deserves.
Oh. For those listeners who are watching this through telepathy, Ryan was pointing about his answer.
Oh, yes.
There you are. All right, well, nothing too controversial there, but hopefully we'll be a little bit more controversial when we're back with part two. Okay, so here we are back with the Beyond the 90 podcast. It's part two, and you can hear us on Stitcher Radio, on Audio Boom, and of course on iTunes. Now, as is always the way, part two will form a roundtable discussion, and I've decided to ask the guys if they could change one rule or process in football, either on or off the pitch, what would it be? So, mine would be as follows, and it's a kangaroo court, which will take place within 48 hours of each round of matches over the weekend. This is actually something that the Scottish SFA tried to do 3 years ago under Gordon Smith, but were told by FIFA no. So I would have a panel of four people, two ex-players, two ex-refs, and basically they can retroactively rescind or hand out red cards to players having viewed video evidence. It would speed up the process, no FA appeals, the whole thing. You could also give players, you know, retroactive yellow cards for simulation, but basically to right some wrongs.
Who
from
would decide
the weekend.
What gets put forward to them?
Well, they would decide that. I mean, I think what you'd have to have, for instance, it could only be for either red cards or for something that was missed that would have been a red card offence, or for simulation, because I think everybody wants diving kicked out of the game.
So if someone had been given a yellow in the match, they'd have the opinion to go back and go, no, that was a straight red.
Only if it's a red. Okay. So you wouldn't look at overturning bookings, because otherwise it's just, you know, the whole thing. I don't see this as undermining the referees, because you have access to two things that the refs don't have, which is you have television pictures and replays, and you also have time. So I don't see that's undermining the refs. In fact, I think if it improves player behaviour, stops diving, all that, I actually think it helps the refs in the long term. So that is mine. Feel free to disagree.
I mean, it's a good point, but I would like to add in, I'd like the referees to come out after a game and respond to some of their decisions, which are absolutely atrocious.
So what you would like, for instance, they have to give an interview in the same way that the managers do, and just give a, this is why I did.
But that can never work, because...
Why?
Well, no, I think it's a great idea.
We're not going to watch TV.
No, the reporters have the ability to... Well, that was clearly an offside.
But what he's saying is that... you're saying that... this is what I saw, and I gave it because of this. Okay. So you explain
exactly why you gave it. There was a bit of a contention there why you sent him off. Can you explain why you did it? And he can say, this is how I saw it. And
that's not dissimilar to rugby, where they explain the decision at the time to the captain.
Exactly.
You can hear it.
And you look at the respect the refs have. I mean, I know it's a different game, but you look at the respect they have. I mean, even with cricket umpires now, when you go to the fourth official, you have the guy, right, go to this angle, go to that angle, clearly this is fine, bump, bump, and you get a decision very quickly if it's clear, and it's explained to the players. I think that's a great idea.
I don't see what harm it would do, and that's the point, and I'd say the knock-on effect is that, especially simulation, that's something that really riles.
Because you've got guys like, you know, Graham Paul and stuff now, who are out making a career out of, you know.
Graham Paul, what is he? Graham Paul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's sitting there and he's saying, well, you know, he should have done this, he should have done that. And I'm sure probably the refs would like a right of reply. I mean, they can't speak because they're not allowed to.
Why they don't do what they do in rugby, and if they don't want to do this interview afterwards, is just have the microphone on and they just sort of talk. So you can hear, they can have it on, and then they can turn around and they can say, right, we're sending you off because blah, blah, blah. And you can hear one person talking to the other.
And you can generally have, can you have the mics now so that you don't pick up all the other stuff?
Yeah, they can have a time delay, but it brings it to one of my points, actually, which is the verbal abuse.
Yeah.
Bang, stamp out. It's just, it should simply
just
be...
Just this pod.
Yeah. It should be known that if you swear, you're going to be... I know you understand that people swear, no, but if you're in the referee's face, like, that they swearing and being aggressive, and they, you know, you can read, we all can read lips, they say some horrible things. You should be like, right, you're off. They'll learn straight away.
Yeah, well, it takes 6 weeks, but yeah.
Well, at least with Wayne Rooney, I mean, he actually looks right at the camera when he does it, right?
But no, if you got rid of that, I mean, I know Stephen and I did the whole role model thing, but a lot of kids do look up to these footballers and see how it's done.
Well, it's terrible on the, you know, with all the, you know, the youth football now and at schools football. Yeah. I mean, it's all over.
That's how you stamp it out, not half measures. You go, right, this season, we're clamping down this, there'll be the maximum penalties.
All you need to do is you just turn around, one person swears because... At the end of the day, in the heat of the moment, you go, oh, and you might...
Yeah, that's different, right? If it's
and
frustration,
then you can turn around and you go,
if it's directed...
Try not to swear again, and if it carries on, you go, oh, right, sorry, mate, have a nice day.
I guess it depends what sport... I mean, the problem is it seems to be different rules for different sports. I mean, I read an interview with David Gower, one of the Sky commentators in cricket, and he said that they had this great idea of using the stump mics, and he says they just can't use it. He said it's just obscene. So he says it just can't be... But then you look at, for instance, US sports, you know, and you look at something like basketball, which, for instance, has a huge amount of physical contact between less people, so it's much more intense and personal. Yet there doesn't, that I can see, I mean, okay, there's pockets of things, but there doesn't seem to be the verbal, you know, stuff going on in, you know, basketball, for instance.
You don't see them crowding around the referee all shouting and bawling.
And it's the same with rugby. You look at rugby, I mean, rugby's obviously a lot more physical contact. You know, you can understand why players sometimes lose their tempers more, but yet they still, when that little 5'6" referee stood there and there's all these massive...
Well, that's because they know they're going to get a yellow card. They know they're going on.
And let the team down, that's the thing.
When I'm still maintaining all this, you're going to have... couple of weeks of 2-3 weeks of chaos, and then the whole thing stops.
But to be honest with you, I mean, it follows on. I mean, I had a couple of points, but one of them was the sin bin. I think for certain malicious sort of like little niggles where you clip someone's heels, you know, and it's not a sending off, but you get a yellow card.
This is what they're talking about. Orange card.
Orange card.
I don't know about that because I think a lot of players like being in the spotlight, being the sin bin. It's a bit for their Twitter account.
What I meant was for something like swearing.
Just get him off.
For something like swearing, if you progressively swear, and it's obviously with the mics they have these days, you can record it. If they're rather than sending them off,
progressively swear. Do you start with really soft swear words? And then get up to the hardcore stuff.
What is it? It's just basically everyone's just sort of standing on where you go, and then it's like, and you hear more and more swearing. I think a little orange card, you put them in a sin bin for 10 minutes, I guarantee you, they're not getting it sent off, but at the same time as they're getting penalised by their team on the day. And that's the big thing, is to get penalised on the day.
Sounds like you have a lot of footballers practising ventriloquism on
this.
Okay, Ryan, what would your suggestion be?
I can't quite pinpoint the season where this changed in the first place, which is banning tackling from football. But tackling needs to be allowed again. Yeah. I mean, we've seen this season earlier on, I have to admit, was it Newcastle? I think there was one ridiculously clean tackle that sort of got all the respect and got sent off the guy.
Yeah. Well, I think there's this thing now, which is it's this thing, excessive force, isn't it? So, it used to be that if you got the ball, it didn't really matter what else happened.
You can't be dangerous. I have no problems. But if you can clearly get the ball, I don't care what angle you come from, if you clearly get the ball and it's not endangering a player, it should be allowed. And that is a part of football, a really important part of football. I know we've discussed European versus UK, but regardless, it is an absolute talent, an absolute skill. I mean,
slide tackling is effectively outlawed.
Correct, that's what I mean. It's effectively banned, and that is wrong, because the game gets broken up, it's frustrating, especially when you sit and you go, well, that just wasn't a foul. You know it wasn't a foul, there's no malice. People are getting unnecessarily sent off 2 yellow cards. It spoils games. bring tackling back. Let it, but obviously it can't be done with excessive force.
I mean, it's easily done. I mean, the thing is, I mean,
no, but you can't leave your elbow. You can't have your foot up.
If you're running 20 clicks or 20.
It's a contact sport, though.
And you've got another guy running at speed, and you hit them. You are going to follow through.
So what? It's a contact sport.
Your trailing leg, whether it's your knee or your ankle or whatever, you're going to
clearly be able to decide whether it was intentional or not intentional or dangerous.
That's what my panel's for on a Monday.
There you go.
So you want to go through, exactly. Like when I used to play at the very poor level I used to play at, I would always try and put a big challenge in the first 5 minutes to let the opposition striker know I was there, just give him what, just to make him think twice about what he's going to do for the rest of the game. I wasn't trying to hurt him, it was just to go through in a big way, yeah. Win the ball cleanly, but he ends up on the floor, I've won the ball cleanly, but he's to know, this is my area, this is my territory.
I guess my point is really skill tackles, not brutal tackles. I mean, the point is, it's a part of the game. It spoils the game with people not necessarily getting sent off or just breaking the flow of the game down. And it's so frustrating as a viewer. I think that was one single thing. Just bring back allow tackling again.
I played against Doug Rugby at the end of his career, ex-Chelsea player, ex-Aberdeen player. And I remember I was backing into him and he was screaming at the ref, this wee kid's backing in. And the ref's going, play on. And then the next minute, when the ref wasn't looking, the linesman wasn't looking, that I ended up in the touchline in the boardings because he just grabbed me and threw me to the side.
He was a fairly big guy.
And at that point, I realised, you know what, maybe I'll go back into him too aggressively. Yeah.
So that for me, by far and away, would make all the difference to a game. Yeah.
I guess the other problem as well is that, you know, that there's not even a... You know, there's no consistency across the different, you know, countries and things.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
One of the arguments being put forward for Andy Carroll not going to the European Championships is that he will just give away so many free kicks every time he jumps for the ball. A continental ref is just going to give a foul.
I saw one, and I don't know if ever you watched the American side of the football. But you see these guys playing soccer, and I watched a game against Miami against, I can't remember what it was, maybe Tampa or something like that. There were two teams were playing, and the guy never even got touched by the centre half, and he went into a dive that Tom Daley would have been actually sort of proud of, because it was sort of, the back was arched, everything, he landed down, and then when the referee ran over, he booked him. The guy was complaining. But when you saw it in slow motion, you just shot.
That's when Monday panel comes in again.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, the diving is, for me, is
worse.
I mean, you know, people are complaining about the referees, but at the same time, they're not taking into account the fact that the players are making it so hard. And some of these guys are getting extremely clear. This whole thing about, if there's contact, I can go down, I leave my leg trailing. You know, it's making it harder and harder for them. I mean, I've seen many, you know, penalty decisions where, even after you've watched it half a dozen times, you're still not sure.
Or the opposite. I mean, if you're touched and you don't go down, they won't get a penalty.
I mean,
the referee should bring it back, say it's a penalty because you're still fouling and you encourage that.
You look at that, one of the ones that was the most difficult this year was when Liverpool won away at Palace and Benteke won that penalty right at the end. You watch that from different angles and you get a completely different, but there's no doubt that Benteke left his leg in to go down, but by the rule of the law.
I mean, that would be an interesting thing, whereas if you did intentionally foul someone and he managed to stay on their feet, they were allowed a free shot, you know, so basically they could carry on having a shot, and if they never scored, you could actually take it back and give them a penalty anyway. So it's like,
well, I thought you meant a free shot at the guy.
No.
I was thinking these are just Glaswegian
changes that are important.
But one of the things that I mean, there was two things that I liked, I would love to change, and that one of them is for actually the teams to go back to only 14 or 15 players, 14 preferably, squads, you know, on squad day, where you could only select the goalkeeper and two subs type of thing. I much prefer that,
think,
because it gives the managers, and when you think about how many utility players,
he started drinking again.
No, but if you think of it, you look at utility players back in the day. I mean, even if you say,
Drew, word is one, Drew, they're going to increase it to four subs,
oh,
and you're soon going to have 10 players on there.
Oh my god! Anyway, so that was the thing.
What difference does it make if you got 20 subs?
No, because it used to make. I mean, the game when you were a manager, you didn't have a team of 18, and sometimes you would have to pick your utility player because he could cover a midfield position, a left back, etc.
Alright, okay. Well, sounds like Drew's going back to balls with leather stitching and metal studs. But we will leave.
The only real one I actually wanted to change was like the tennis. I think managers should
I'd like to change tennis as well. Yeah, don't let me continue.
Be given a challenge. Yeah. No, they should be given a challenge.
So it's part three, sorry.
Just jealous.
All right. Well, that will bring us to the end of part two, and we'll be back with part three with some reviews and then some previews. Sorry, and then our quiz. Okay, and so here we are back with part three of the Beyond the 90 podcast, and we're going to preview pretty much all of the games coming up this weekend. Ryan's already predicted they're all going to be draws. So, Ryan, this quintessential six-pointer. Norwich versus Sunderland is going to be a one-pointer then, is it?
They'll all be draws, you mark my words. Not all of them, but 80% of the games this week will be draws. Anyway, saying that, I think Sunderland will win this one.
I mean, you were saying beforehand Sunderland have been very unlucky.
Yeah, they have. They performed very well last game against Leicester. They were caught out by counter-attack, which was inevitable. They needed to win.
Well, I think they were caught out by having Jack Rodway.
That shot...
It was like an air show.
That was ridiculous. He didn't even see that.
When he looked over the linesman afterwards, he's like, please let me be offside.
That was, I was flabbergasted at that.
But anyway, you think Sunderland can...
Not that they deserve to, I think they...
I mean, Norwich are right back in it if Sunderland win, right?
There are twists and turns left in this, Villa aside. But Sunderland, for me, they're motivated, they played well, they don't look like a team dead on their feet. They really did play well against Leicester.
So yet again, we're going for an away win.
I would go for an away win here on this one.
Or a draw. Another away win. All right, Drew?
To be honest with you, I'm going to go with a draw.
There you go.
Tom?
Home win. Alex O'Neill's...
Alex
boys.
O'Neill? Alex Neil.
Alex Neil. Oh, Neil. He's foreign,
isn't
he?
He's moved over
He's foreign.
He must be a bit of Irish. His grandmother. He could probably play for Ireland, couldn't he?
They've done well at home. They do tend to struggle away. Obviously, they lost last weekend. But at home, I think they'll have enough to beat Sunderland early kick-off. Yeah, I think they'll nick it 1-0 or something like that.
Well, I would venture this is... I think if Norwich win this, I think they'll probably stay up. But if they don't, I think they're going down.
They've done it before. They used to win trophies and go down, didn't they?
I'll go for a draw. Now, this sounds like a sort of a kid's sort of cartoon lunchtime thing that I used to watch. But I mean, Louis van Gaal's random tactics generator.
Total mess football.
Ryan, or Drew, come on, they must be able to relegate Villa.
I'm going to go with Birmingham and the Man U Villa. I don't really care. I think the sooner LVG goes, the better for Man United as a team. And I can even pick. I don't even understand why Fellini's in the team. Why is Fellini in the team?
As United fans, the two of you, are you actually going to bother watching this game?
No.
Ryan, you normally watch everything.
Is it the early kickoff? It's not, is it?
No, it's not. No, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
Depends how many beers there.
I'm going to wash my hair that day. I'm going to find some and I'm going to watch
it. It is a pretty uninspiring game. So quickly, Drew.
It's a Man U win.
Man U win. Tom.
Man U win.
Ryan.
I'm being emotionally clouded, but I don't think Man U will win it.
Mate, have you seen Villa? They are so bad.
United are just as bad as Villa. They just have one result out of five. They just had that one result. The next four results, and unfortunately that takes us to the end of the season, will be crap.
Yeah,
they won't even have a shot on target against Villa.
You don't need to have a shot on target to beat Villa.
Well, maybe they'll score an own goal. Okay, if United win, it'll be 1-0, it'll be Villa own goal. But
Villa could start playing that's another case.
So it's a draw?
Villa could start playing with freedom now.
I think United will win this 3 or 4-0. Villa are that bad. I watched Chelsea play them and they were appalling. Tom, Newcastle Swansea, this is the first of two games in 3 days for Newcastle, both at home. Has Benitez bitten off more than he can chew here? Did he actually maybe realise just how bad these guys were? Or?
I think he has by allowing his reaction. He said that he allowed the team to argue last week at half time, which has now resulted in one of the players after the game not being available this week because he broke his fingers.
Oh yeah, he's broken
his fingers by punching a locker. And he, again, he's playing all out attack.
No, it's true.
No, but maybe Benitez just jammed it in the locker and says, don't stop back to me.
No, that's first.
He's played all out attacking football. You can't, that is available to him at Newcastle. He's thrown on all his attacking players.
I mean, I guess the only thing is that Swansea, you know, had a good win against, well, not really, but they just beat Chelsea last week.
They got a run together.
They're sort of, they can sleepwalk from here.
Yeah. Sigurdsson, yeah. Sigurdsson's playing really well for them. I think Swansea are going to win. I think Newcastle, I think they're dead and buried.
Well, I mean, Swansea have reached their 40 points, you know, the magical 40. And
I think it's lackadaisical time for teams like that.
Yeah.
So, all right, so what are you going for here?
Swansea.
Another away win. Yeah. Here we go. Ryan?
Draw.
I think Swansea will win. I think they'll play with a bit of freedom. They're not really worried whether they win or lose. Newcastle are going to be so nervous.
I don't think Swansea are an on-the-beach team. I know we come to that part of the season, but I don't see Swansea as that type of...
The manager, he's been linked with the Italy job and thing. I think Newcastle will win this one. I don't think they'll beat City on Tuesday. I mean, guys, I mean, you know, Tom, you're saying Swansea will win. They've got City on Tuesday. Do you think they can get anything there?
What, Newcastle? No. City will go firing.
Ryan, you'll be taking Newcastle. But to be honest, though, what do you do? Manchester City versus a Rafa Benitez team? What are you hoping for, like a hurricane or something? Or?
I don't care.
I think it'll be a draw. And I'm not trying to be funny. Newcastle will be motivated to get a result. This is where things go a bit topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
City might be too complacent. They'll have had a hard, don't forget, they had Champions League earlier this week. They've got, obviously, Chelsea this weekend. But that just takes its toll. And we know what City are like when they're...
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, if United beat Villa... And just say Chelsea did beat City, they'd only be a point ahead of United.
There's lots left in this season.
That's what I was saying, is I think if Newcastle, it'll depend how Newcastle turn up for the City game. If results go their way and Norwich get brought into it and they win at the weekend...
Let's do this slightly differently. Drew, Newcastle, possible 6 points in the next 3 days. How many are they going to get?
Two.
What's two draws then?
Exactly.
Yeah. Zero.
Zero.
Two.
I'm going for three. I think they'll beat Swansea, get beat by City. Okay, now, staying with City, Chelsea City, the late kickoff on Saturday. I mean, Tom, are Chelsea going to... I mean, the better performances have come against the bigger teams, but, I mean, have they literally got to the stage now where they just don't care?
I think now they're on the beach. After their performance against Swansea last weekend, I think a lot of players have checked out. For the season,
I think some of them are trying to get sold. So, you know,
I think City will come down maybe with a few changes to their team, obviously after their midweek from Champions League. I still think City will nick it, probably 1-0.
Ryan,
the European hangover coupled with the Chelsea don't care attitude, change of manager, everything else.
I mean, City played at home on Tuesday. So it's not like it's a big, you know, they weren't away.
But it's that lack of motivation. You're not playing for your place next season. The manager's going to be different.
Yeah.
People are, why aren't we in the Champions League anyway? I want to leave. You're absolutely right.
But so City are playing for fourth space.
They are. But they'll want a European hangover.
No, but they'll want to wrap up fourth.
Drew?
I'm going to go with Chelsea against my better judgment. I think along lines...
Drew wins the quiz.
Yeah. I think along the lines of Ryan, I think Man City have got their eye on the bigger prize, which for them is the Champions League.
But that's not... those games aren't until the week after.
It's not so much, it's the thought process, because now Pellegrini is going to start rotating.
But this is ridiculous again, right? I mean, because City are going to... presumably City will have to play next weekend as well. So they're going to have three games in 8 days before they go and play.
So wrong.
It's just really, really average, isn't it? Draw. Hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Leicester, West Ham. I'm going with a draw here, but I mean, everybody who's not a Spurs fan presumably wants Leicester to win.
Yeah, I want Leicester to win.
And in fact, even probably West Ham fans, bearing in mind it's Spurs who are the other, probably want Leicester to win.
I think Leicester will win, and it's purely because Hammers will have a hangover from the FA Cup.
I think Leicester will probably nick it. I mean, there's the 7-point gap, so they can play with a bit of freedom, so they know if they muck up once, it's not too bad a thing. You can also look at Spurs are playing Stoke on Monday. I think Leicester, they're at home, they can just invite West Ham on and just nick them on the break.
Yeah. That would be the correct tactics, but West Ham are playing for your, you know, playing for that fourth, fifth place, right?
I can see a draw coming here.
Bilic, I'll give Bilic some credit, he motivates people to step up. They had a terrible performance, a terrible result against United. They're going to be motivated. Leicester are the form team.
I mean, West Ham have made it very hard for teams playing away from home and counter-attacking, and I think the general consensus is Leicester are not that great with the ball. It's direct,
70% possession against them, right? They're happy with that.
Yeah, but if West Ham are not going to come on to them, that's what I'm saying. They're going to
Why it's going to be a draw.
I mean, from West Ham's point of view, they've still got an outside chance, as Man U have, of this fourth place.
But Leicester are a better team. They're better at grinding results out.
They're at the top of the league, so of course. And they're fighting for Europe, West Ham.
That's what I'm saying. So it balances out.
But I still think they've got a hangover from the last game.
What do you think the result's going to be?
I think it's going to be 2-0 Leicester.
Well, I mean, we know Andy Carroll's got a hangover because he probably went out afterwards. Yep. But, I mean, everybody else probably got over it, but
I hope he gets his hair cut.
He just needs to. It's just 10 years old, isn't it?
I mean, he's got French plaits and everything going on. What's our latest step?
That sounds like jealousy.
Our fashion police expert, Tom, what do you think of his fashion?
Long hair at the moment.
Long hair, short hair.
Not in.
All right, well, speaking of people who look like big girls' blouses, Arsenal. At home to Palace. I mean, Tom, Arsenal are surely out of it now, and Palace are probably safe, right? I mean,
yeah, Arsenal, they know they're not going to win anything, so they'll probably win this 3 or 4-0 because they've got nothing to play for.
You do definitely want to finish third instead of fourth because that qualifying round is... Arsenal negotiated it very, very well over the years, but it alters your whole pre-season and everything. You need to be on the money for that.
Yeah, I think with that, the points that Palace picked up Palace, I think, are pretty much safe. They've really got nothing to play for. I think you look at their squad, I think some of their players will check out for the beach. Arsenal got nothing to play for, a bit of flair at home. Yeah, easy. I think 2-3-0 Arsenal win.
Okay, Brian?
Well, I said 80% of the matches are going to be a draw, and this is one of them that might not be.
You can't add up, can you?
No. So Sunderland are going to win. And Arsenal are going to win is what I'm going to say. It's 2 out of 10. It's 10 matches over, you know.
Yeah, well, we're not previewing 10.
No, but I'm saying the token matches of the weekend, 80%.
We're previewing 7, so how are you going to get 80%?
It just so happened that two of the ones you selected
can't even divide that.
Are the 20% of the total matches that might not be a draw. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Arsenal. I want it to be a draw because I don't like Arsenal, but I think Arsenal do have the quality. They're still fighting for something. Look, it's a London derby. It could be a draw, but look, Arsenal. Ugh, draw. Arsenal.
I'm going to go with Arsenal. I think it would be interesting if Palace won, but I think Arsenal are just going to. They don't have anything to worry about now, so they'll play quite freely and they'll probably hump them about 4-0.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, you know, there's a few players in that Arsenal team looking, you know, to get into the European Championships and to be starting and things. I mean,
plus Palace are 38 points. I mean, they're pretty safe, so I mean,
there's a lot of players that seem to remarkably not be injured anymore now that the European Championships are coming up. Well, I think Arsenal, I think will win this comfortably. I just don't think Palace are very good. Okay, now Stoke versus Spurs. I mean, guys, this is the Monday night fixture. It's hard to call this one because I guess it really gets affected by what Leicester do. I mean, Stoke have been a bit moody, haven't they? I mean, they're not really doing much. They're not really upsetting anybody. They're just kind of a bit mediocre. And Spurs, well, I mean, they tonked you lot. That's not hard.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing special there.
Rangers could tonk that
off. Tom,
I'm going to go
sanity.
Home win. Stoke, I mean, they've just come off a hammering away at Liverpool. I think Hughes will have been into his players, you know, to switch them back on and to get a result. Stoke is a tough place to go for any Premier League.
It's not January.
Do you know, when was the last time, I mean, okay, outside of, and forgive me here, guys, because
if you look at this with Stoke, it is very much win, draw, lose. That's their last six. So yeah. I guess they're due to win.
Yeah.
If you actually look at it, you have to go back to the last time they beat a top 10, top 10 team was back in Liverpool, back in the Capital One Cup, and in the league, that's been, oh my God, they haven't, I mean, you can't even go back.
I think though, if Leicester, say
just
Leicester win,
scroll up on your iPad.
Broken Drew's
iPad. Law of averages, mate. That's what puts it in their favour.
If Leicester win at home, it's a difference. It's a Sunday and a Monday. That's a full near enough 24 hours between them playing. The Spurs players have got to sleep on that. If Leicester win, they're 10 points.
The other thing,
10
is
points clear. It's going to build
December.
Up in the Spurs' head.
I've looked on my iPad. I've used my finger and I've done the scroll. It was against Everton 4-3. Can you believe that?
That was the last time they beat.
That was the last time they beat a top 10 team.
Yeah, but Everton are 12th.
Okay, that's not, sorry, they might be top 10. Well, Man U.
Sorry. Yeah, everyone does that.
26th of December.
Man U.
All right, so anyway, Tom, so you're going with a home win.
Yeah,
home
win.
Presumably you're not.
Yeah, no, I'm top Spurs all the way.
Yeah, Mark Hughes wants to upset the big clubs, it'll be a draw. No, it will be. Be a draw.
I don't know yet. I'm really, really am annoyed by how good the Spurs team is. They're a really, really good team, and I think they'll win. Okay, now I have to admit to being rather grumpy when I did the quiz last night, so it is absolutely horrendous. So I'm hoping for the first time we'll have three losers. So, here we go.
Ole Solskjaer.
He is not the answer to any
David
question. Vier. Okay, now, Lionel Messi has not scored or assisted in his last five games. When was the last time that this happened in his career?
2008.
Yeah, I was going to say 2008.
Ryan?
2003.
You're all wrong. Never.
What? Wow.
It was his worst run since 2008.
Nope, worst run ever. It's never happened before.
I've never scored or assisted.
It may have been before the
what about his school boy days?
And then it's
professional career. Now, professional. What is this sequence? 0-0-0-2. 0-0-0-0-0-0-1-0-0-1.
Simone in the Champions League.
United shots on target in the first half.
I think you've got it there.
Because that's a big stat. That's always
a
big stat.
I think you've got it, but I'm going to go United shots on target.
No, I'm going to give Drew 1 point.
What?
But I'll give him another one if he can clarify his answer.
It's the goals Atletico Madrid have conceded whilst playing in the Champions League under the management of Simone.
No. It's Atletico's last 16 Champions League games at home, goals conceded.
Oh, I thought that was okay. I missed home games.
Oh, no, you said under Diego Simeone. It's the last 16.
I think our answer is better. Sorry.
You're trying to be too clever,
aren't
you?
Right, now then, you've still got 1 point. You know? Right, name the two Italian clubs that Diego Simeone played for during his career.
Inter Milan.
Napoli.
No. Juve.
He's got one.
Juve.
No.
Sampdoria.
No.
Parma. Juve.
No.
Cagliari.
AC.
One more from you, or you're out of time.
Lazio.
Lazio, Tom Lazio. Gets it. All right.
Now, blue.
Now, whilst at Lazio, he won the Serie A and Cup double in 99-2000. Who was the manager?
Lazio.
Capello.
So, the Coppa Italia and Serie A.
No. Fuck. I can't.
How
are
you?
Ranieri.
Sven Goran
Eriksson!
Svenigans. Now, Simeone arrived at Inter in 1997 when he transferred from Spain. Who was their outgoing manager that summer?
He arrived
in the summer of 1997, joined Inter. But who left Inter as their manager that summer?
Oh, it's going to be someone funny. Sven Goran Eriksson. No.
Nope.
Ranieri.
Nope. Ryan. No.
No.
Roy Hodgson.
Oh, wow.
Now Roy Hodgson has played as managed England 7 games in major finals. What's his playing record? What's his management record?
You mean win, draw, loss?
7. Yep.
He hasn't won any.
One. 2. Drawn. 3, lost 2.
Ryan gets the points.
Whoa! Bang! That should be triple points because there are 3 individual answers there.
All right, he's played 49 games. Sorry, he's managed 49 games in England. What's his overall record?
The same again?
What's his overall record as England manager?
What, win, drawn, loss?
Yep.
Over 49 games?
Mm-hmm. I'd say he's
130, drawn 10, lost 9.
Okay.
I'd say 131, drawn 28, lost 10.
Okay.
Just to be the right side of it, 32 wins.
we did win all 10 games on our way to Europe.
8 losses. So what does that leave me with? Whatever the balance is for draws.
You're leaving with the wrong answer. Tom wins. Tom gets points. He's 129, drawn 13.
Oh, win.
That gives him a win ratio of 59.18.
Excellent.
Now, in his management career, he's managed 995 games. What's his overall win percentage?
56.
No way.
Well, he's managed league winning teams in Scandinavia, Switzerland.
40.
What did you go with?
56.
43%.
43.
Win percentage.
Oh, wait, he
46.2%.
Ryan gets it, 43.5%. Ah, Diego Simeone has managed 455 games.
Ooh.
What's his overall win rate?
52%.
52.
Oh, it's more than that. It's because he had 56.
Could
he's
it
got
be more 46. Than that.
I reckon.
You have started drinking again.
No, I reckon it's 54. What'd you say?
52.
54.
No, like 46.
55.6. Yay! And Atletico. Listen to this, Atletico, it's 62.95.
Really?
Now, which country was Sven's last job in management?
Jordan.
Iran.
China.
2010.
Oh, okay. North Korea.
No.
Jordan. Who pays the most money?
Oman.
Somewhere in Africa.
Somewhere in Africa.
Ooh.
Nigeria.
Angola.
Oh, Central African Republic.
No, Ivory Coast.
Oh, that was my second one.
Now, what was his win percentage with England over his 67 games? You're going to say about 10%?
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah.
54%.
54%.
Win ratio?
For England?
Win ratio is lower than that.
I'm pounds
say,
per win.
I'm going to say 47%.
47. What did you go with, sorry? 40?
54.
54, sorry.
41%.
59.7.
What? No! No way!
Yeah.
What was Sir Bobby Robson's?
43.
50? 53. 49.4.
Yeah!
So basically, Sven had a 10% higher win ratio.
Yeah, only because he organised matches against Costa Rica all the time.
Now, name three of the continental clubs that Robson managed.
Barcelona.
Barcelona,
correct.
PSV.
Yep.
Correct.
I'm glad you're coming up. Newcastle.
Juve.
No, it was... PSV. I believe, was that another Dutch?
Don't give me any clues.
I thought it would be Dutch.
Sampdoria?
There was another Dutch club.
Feyenoord?
Nope.
One of the... Where was that?
Groningen?
No, PSV twice. But there's still two more.
Oh.
Is there?
Oh.
So he had four.
It's a club he went to straight after Lille.
Young Boys.
Sporting Lisbon and Porto.
Oh, no, Young Boys was Swiss.
Who replaced Robson at Barcelona?
The guy now, LVG.
Yep, LVG. LVG left Barcelona and went on to manage Holland. He then returned to club football with...
Man U. After Holland. Well,
2002-2003.
No. Ajax.
No.
Inter.
Ajax, Inter, Ryan.
You go back to Barcelona.
He did go back to Barcelona.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Now,
well, you didn't though, did you? I did.
Louis van Gaal resigned from his technical director role in 2004 at Ajax after a bust-up with
Koeman.
Ronald Koeman.
The players are at tactics.
And what is Koeman's longest stay at one team as a manager?
Southampton.
Two seasons.
PSV.
Two seasons you're going for?
Number?
What?
PSV, I'm going to say three seasons.
Three seasons.
Well, I already said Southampton, so what's that?
Two.
All right. Drew gets the points. 4 years at Ajax. That was really quite nasty, wasn't it?
It was more than nasty.
But it wasn't actually that hard. I mean, it was Sven, Roy Hodgson.
It's not like that you wanted room details, guys. Why did win, draw, and lost? And I was the only person that had
to. If any of you actually knew anything about football.
Well, I gave you the exact win, draw, loss. So, I don't think that's ever been done ever before.
Anyway,
ever.
Did I say it? So,
anyway.
Unfortunately, Drew gets the win again.
Triple points?
This is where we need your. This is where we need your video referee.
I think Drew gets it, especially for the Atletico sequence. Knowing that one.
Oh, come on!
All right. Well, that has been the Beyond the 90 podcast. I'm your host, Steve McVeigh. A big thank you to our three regulars and regular quiz winner, Mr. Drew O'Donnell.
Thank you very much for
regular it. Space suit.
Thank you, Mum and Dad. Yeah. And everybody
you take a picture of him in his space suit.
BMXer Ryan Marsden.
Yes.
And our championship expert, Mr. Tom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys, and we'll be back next week.